Welcome to the Engineering Culture Podcast. This is a new series focused on creating and nurturing effective teams. The Engineering Culture Podcast joins the InfoQ Podcast as a regular series brought to you by the engineers at InfoQ.com and behind the international conferences QCon. Our podcasts at InfoQ are aimed squarely at software engineers, architects, and software leaders. My name is Shane Hasty, and I'm the lead editor for Culture and Methods on InfoQ.com. At the recent Agile 2016 conference, I was able to sit down with Kent McDonald, Steve Adolph, and Ryland Layton to talk about the state of business analysis and product management as it pertains to agile product development today. Gentlemen, would you like to introduce yourselves? Kent, can I start with you?
Sure. Hi, my name's Kent McDonald. Been in the industry for a couple decades now. Bit of experience working with IT organizations, mostly in financial services. Written a couple books and spent a lot of time working with folks trying to improve their ability to analyze with an agile mindset.
Hi there, I'm Steve Adolph, and I've been in the industry long enough that my first program was on punch cards. And I've been working as a consultant in Agile for probably about the last 15 years. I've written a book on use case patterns with a couple of colleagues, Paul Bramble and Alistair Coburn and Andy Poles. And just have had a really enjoyable time this weekend with my colleagues here.
And Ryland.
I'm Ryland Layton. Been doing business analysis for 15 or 20 years now, and a few of those have been spent in Agile. Also author of a book published about a year ago on the Agile business analyst moving from waterfall to Agile.
Great. So, gents, what is the current state of analysis and product management in Agile? We hear we don't need no analysis because we're Agile. Is that a thing now, or have we got past that?
Unfortunately, I'm seeing some organizations buying into that idea. I literally have seen organizations where they are removing the analyst or business analyst role from their organization because they have the feeling, awesome, we do not need business analysts anymore because we have product owners with the teams, they're taking on this responsibility. As you can imagine, this makes life very, very interesting for coaches and consultants who are trying to help them make their transformation.
Yeah, I'm seeing some similar things. It's, you know, hooray, we can get rid of our business analysts. But I'm also encouraged when I see other companies that are saying things like, our business analysts are repositories of huge amounts of organizational knowledge, and they know where the code is buried, they know where the business requirements are buried, they know the history of how we got to where we are, they know why things are the way they are. And they're saying, how can I keep this in Agile when certain people have come in to tell me this are saying, you can dump your BAs. And we're saying, we know we can't, or if we know we can't, we don't think we should, what should we do?
I actually haven't run into any companies dumping staff wholesale because of a move to Agile. What I have seen run across is a lot of confusion as far as what do we do with these folks, or what role do they play? Can they play this role or that role? And it's interesting that a lot of times that decision isn't necessarily being made from the right perspective, from the standpoint that instead of really looking at what roles they used to play and then moving into a certain one, it seems like it should be more about what's the individual skills of that individual person and figuring out where's the best fit. Also, I've seen several different models as far as how to kind of tie together, folks that are doing more business analysis versus product owners. And then if you mix in a product type company where product managers and product owners fit together, it's kind of interesting the different models that have shown up.
So if we think of it more as a set of skills, then what are some of the skills that are needed to do effective analysis in Agile? And maybe what does effective analysis look like in Agile environments?
I think a lot of what analysis looks like in an Agile environment is actually what good analysis looks like anywhere. It's just that it brings a little bit more attention to it. And that's, first of all, being able to figure out what is it that what need we're actually trying to satisfy in the first place. And then even helping facilitate the discussion about, is this need even worth satisfying? I would say that discussion doesn't happen nearly enough. in any environment, agile or not. But that's a really key thing to agile or to analysis. And another thing is being able to, when you're facing a complicated situation, is being able to break it down and understand what are all the impacts and everything like that.
I think the social skill or the collaboration skill of the BA becomes much more, it is really called out in an agile environment. You know, I totally agree with Kent. You know, the skills that gave rise to the BA, that created the need for the BA, did not go away with agile. But what agile really calls out in the BA is, can you be the boundary spanner? Can you go out there and talk to people? Can you be able to turn ideas around quickly enough to keep the fast-moving teams fed? And I think there are BAs who do have a hard time making that transition because they've been used to closeting them, being order takers, and closeting themselves in rooms and writing very thick documents. That really comes as a bit of a shock, that it really is a very social role.
Yeah, I think that the role of the BA in Agile, or any kind of analysis skill, as we've talked about extensively over the last couple of days of lockup around this, we've been clear that analysis skill resides in a lot of different people in an organization. It tends to be concentrated in the BA, but there's no reason that that's the only place it's going to be. It's more difficult to do analysis in some ways in Agile because there's nothing prescriptive about what tool you use when. You have to know your tool bag, you have to know what's in it, and be able to say, given that I have to now deal with this particular area, I should pull out this particular tool, be it an ERD or a context diagram or data flow diagram or just straight discussion and elicitation and refinement techniques. You need to know what's there and know when the right moment is to use it.
What is the state of the art or state of practice? What should organizations be doing in order to get the maximum benefit from these analysis skills we talk about?
I think one of the main things that organizations do, and this may be more bleeding edge than state of the art at this point, is to change the perception of what people with analysis skills are, when they get involved and how effective they can be at various levels of thinking. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that organizations are not taking the advantage of those analysis skill sets and even doing that initial determination of what are the things we should be doing to make sure we're living to or driving towards our strategy. Also around having those discussions about, is this something we should be doing now or at all? And reviewing the decisions like that along the way once an initiative has been started, whether or not it's something they should continue. That's an aspect of analysis I don't think it happens enough in organizations, and doing that kind of thing and really paring down what organizations are trying to accomplish to the really valuable stuff, I think is a huge way to really get the benefits that people think they're getting when they start adopting Agile.
One of the things I've really realized is that, you know, we've talked sometimes about the business analysis skill as the value management skill. You know, and depending on who you ask and whose stats you use, a significant number of the requirements that are given to us as these are really needed turn out to be useless. We develop them. Basically, if you want to use the lean term, we're creating a lot of waste. And I think the role of the BA is, as we're moving more into lean and agile environments, is really, or business analysis skills, is to really be able to get the learning and the feedback into the process as quickly as possible to really say, do we really have to do this? What are the most valuable needs that we have here, and what is the most expedient way to deliver on those needs? Because the odds are that everything that we've been asked to do doesn't contribute in the same way to the organization, is not as valuable, and we've only got so much resources that we can utilize to deliver value. So shouldn't we be making the best use of those resources? In other words, the BA becomes critical in how do we create value.
I like to think, I guess I'm mostly agreeing with both of you, the BA is well positioned to keep their eye on the ball of what are we doing in an agile context in the backlog? What is our backlog composed of? And helping the product owner, who's really keeping an eye on the strategic level of the product and the tactical level of the product, and what do I need to build for the product? to get to that level of, have we done enough on this thing, or this particular feature we're trying to build? Have we drained the backlog sufficiently and built enough of what we need to for this thing? And can we stop this mm-hmm. thing and go to the next thing on the product that would add more and more value? Which is a thing both PMI and IIBA very much say in their project, in their programs, of do the thing that has the most value, and don't be afraid to. PMI is pretty clear on it. Don't be afraid to kill a project if the value just isn't there. That's the best return on investment you can get, is to stop wasting your money.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the key things, is that, you know, we've often suggested, like as you bring up, the BA working in tandem with the product owner, the BA being the trusted advisor to the product owner and enabling to have that information. You know, these items are not worth working on. There are other more valuable features that we can work on.
Echoing something both of you have said, I like to say there's sort of four skills you need to be successful in Agile. Whatever your professional skill is, be it, you know, user experience designer or developer or business analyst or product owner or Scrum Master, skill at the Agile techniques themselves, knowing how to participate in an Agile way, collaboration skills is the other thing. So you have to be able to do those three things. I think I said four initially, but you have to have those. And if you can do that, then you're in a good space. For the BA in the context of the product owner, because usually we just say the product owner is there and they're going to do all of this stuff, and here we're saying, well, we have a BA in addition. The distinction can be, does the product owner have both good product skills and good analysis skills? Because being able to shepherd and coach the product itself through success, through whatever it's supposed to deliver to the business, is not always the same thing as having good analysis skills to think enterprise-wide about your one product. So that's where I see the BA and the product owner dovetailing very well, and the BA being a potentiator and enhancer of the product owner's skill with the product and with the authority about the product.
One of the terms all three of you used, and we've used a lot over this weekend, is value. And the BA as the facilitator of value, and we use the term the value conscience. What is value? How do we identify value in a backlog? How do we know when to stop?
Value comes in many forms. I mean, you know, this is going to sound very crass, but this is commerce. And ultimately, value can be in terms of how does implementing this capability, feature, whatever term you want to use here, help generate revenue for the company? What opportunities does it enable for us? What risks does it reduce for us? What social value does it create in terms of the corporate image? But it is being able to actually place this in an economic context. I think that's key for one of the skills of the business analyst, is to be able to say, given the strategy, the objectives of our organization, how does it mean? How does this contribute to increasing our revenue, opportunity enablement, risk reduction, creating goodwill? How does that create strategic value for us?
In a practical sense, I kind of look at it as it's something that I'll know it when I see it. That isn't very helpful. So the way I like to approach it is in a general term, it's, have we satisfied folks' needs? Have we satisfied the needs that are out there that we've determined are important? If we're doing something that satisfies those needs, we're adding value. But one of the things I'm always doing whenever I'm working a new initiative, working on a new product, one of the first discussions I have is, what's value mean in this context? Because it's different every time you do it. So one of the things I do a lot of right now is I'm product owner for the Agile Alliance. And with it being a nonprofit organization, there's an aspect of economics in there, but it's also more along the lines of, for nonprofits, it's more along the lines of, is this something that's going to help us accomplish our mission of the organization? Which Agile Alliance, a lot of it's around community of software development folks using Agile. So it's a little bit different, and it's a means of helping us make decisions about, do we do this or not, because is it getting us closer to what the organization overall is trying to accomplish?
something I like to do, and I hope it's not too much to talk about a technique for a second.
No, technique is good.
Well, good. So a technique I often, I like to propose to people to use is something a friend of mine coached about, four-box prioritization. And basically taking four boxes and just however you want to lay it out on any given card or epic or store or whatever you're thinking of, saying, okay, let's try to surface this in four ways. One, what's the value to the business of this thing? What's the value to the customer of this thing, which may not be the same thing? What's the dev estimate in t-shirt sizing or points or whatever you want to do, but something that gives you a rough idea of how expensive this is going to be in terms of your, you know, just your time base. And then is there an incremental cost? So a business a cost to the business of this, you could call it dev cost and business cost. If we do this thing, do we have to spin up a number of new Amazon servers, or do we have to buy some sort of new software or engage in training or something? So is there a concrete additional incremental cost beyond the run rate of the team? And that at least lets you look at the low-hanging fruit, if there is any. Obviously, low cost, high value to everybody. Let's do that. You know. And then from there, of course, it's a matter of the product owner at least being able to start to judge those things, and then you can get into, you know, breaking that out a little of, okay, what you're saying, this is very valuable to the business. In what way is this valuable to the business compared to these other things? Is this a revenue increaser? Is this a cost diminisher? Customer satisfaction? In what way is it valuable? Can you help describe that? At least it gets the conversation moving.
You mean everything is critical is not a valid response?
No. Sadly, no.
Sometimes it's come down to actually force ranking, and it can get intense when you're doing that. Because everyone has, especially in organizations where people are incentivized about getting their features into a system.
You know, it'd be nice if in that we added a fifth box, which is value to me.
Yeah.
You know, no, necessary, seriously. Let's put another one in that says, I have to admit I have a bias. I want this thing done because my bonus goes up if I do it.
That's actually would be a brilliant idea.
Might be. It's anything that advances the conversation. I think similar to some moments we've experienced in our own planning activities over the last couple of days, this four-box thing, if you can identify stuff in the obvious quadrant, at least you can stop debating the rest of it for the moment. Mm-hmm. And then maybe things will have shifted into the obvious quadrant again by the time you come back to it, the things that you didn't do, right? Because you'll have advanced your backlog in some way doing the obvious stuff.
So we've come up with some definition of value. How do we help our organizations take this thinking into their way of working?
I think a big part of it is helping them have the conversations around, first of all, what's valuable in our context right now, and then using it for what value is intended to do. At least the way I see it is to help make decisions and stick to those decisions and be explicit about, these are things we should be doing right now, these are things that we shouldn't do right now or ever. that right there is probably going to be the biggest lift. One of the interesting things that goes along with that is that I'm starting to see a kind of a trend that says, you know, we really need to set up operations when you're talking about software development to think of it more like a product and things that are ongoing on an ongoing basis, as opposed to organizing things based on projects, which there's a lot of advantages to that. The slippery slope with that is that at some point you might get to it where you may no longer need to do anything else to that particular thing. And then from a grander overall organizational vision, we need to move and focus on something else. Because one of the things I run into is just because you can do something doesn't mean you necessarily should. Do something.
Yeah, what I wanted to add on to that is, you know, we've just had this conversation about what is value and what is valuable. The problem is, and as you were mentioned, you said before, you gave the examples, I will know it when I see it. Our problem is people don't necessarily know what's valuable, and we have to somehow generate the learning that's going to help people be able to make that decision. So in other words, as we, you know, when we're working with agile methods, what the agile methods do for us is they provide that feedback. Let's put something out there. Let's get something incremental. Put it in front of whoever our customer is. Have them say, no, that's not what we want, or that's kind of what we want, but this is what, now I understand what I really need. So a big part of what's happening here is learning what's valuable by creating something, getting knowledge from that, and feeding it back into the process. And feeding it back into the process sufficiently quickly that it actually can steer the process, so that you can learn what really is valuable.
I was talking to someone at a company the other day who's dealing with the problem of "I'll know it when I see it" being the main thing their product owner tells them, and then they literally spend sprint after sprint after sprint building possible things that their product owner might want, because no one is holding the product owner accountable to the fact that this is dev cycles you're spending. You're spending production dollars or development dollars, burning time, because you can't decide what you want ahead. I think it should be taken as an operational issue and to say, look, that's a real thing. We don't always know what we want until we see it, but there are a lot less expensive ways to do it than to do it in production 100% of the time. You know, I don't need to list the possibilities here, but you know, the obvious thing is, okay, let's at least rule some things in or out through paper prototyping that you can do offline as much as you want, rapidly iterate it, and then give something to the dev team to build. But I think the point there is, take it as an operational issue. If they really say, "I'll know it when I'll see it," there, you got to do better than that.
You got to do better. I absolutely agree. And you're raising a point that's really near and dear to my heart, is modeling seems to have gone out of fashion with Agile. There seems to be, for some reason, the moment you say Agile in a lot of organizations, they believe now, okay, we throw all the modeling techniques we use overboard. And models were created for a simple reason. They are a cheap and quick way of trying to narrow that solution space. You know, eventually, yeah, we're going to have to put a stake in the sand and maybe build part of the system, because to continue modeling it now becomes more expensive than just trying to build the system, or doesn't generate information. But you're absolutely right. There are a lot of, it is an operational issue, because you should, the BA or someone who's doing that, playing the analysis role there, should be able to say, okay, we can use models because they're cheaper. It's a cheaper way to learn what we really need right now. Okay, now it's probably, this is a good time now to actually build something and get the feedback from that.
You know, connecting to what both of you have said, even if you're using a prototyping tool like Axure or several others, just to do some live work with that and some visualizations and so on, it's okay to say, you know what, I'm going to have to do something else in my backlog that I can be certain about versus this thing that I have no idea unless I know it when I see it, just because of the level of risk. If you're estimating it at, well, I'll know it when I see it and I'm likely to see it 50 to 75% in the next thing, well, you're basically flipping a coin as to whether you're getting any value out of that sprint, unless it's just purely UI changes and you can separate them from the rest of the application and move some things around on the screen, as it were. That's relatively inexpensive. But really, the things we're talking about are more expensive than that.
Yeah.
So prototyping and modeling, I think, should definitely come in when people are throwing that, I'll know it when I see it. It's real and it happens, so we just have to have a way to help the person get over it.
Right, so we've got some ideas for organizations to take forward and start bringing in some discipline around their prioritization. What's next? What are the future things that we're starting to see happen in the world of product management and analysis? One of the things we hear about a lot today is DevOps, for instance. How does DevOps influence what we're doing with that rapid feedback cycle, for instance? And are there other things that we need to take into account?
So the stuff I talked about a little bit earlier is potentially bleeding edge might fit into this as well. and you can sum it up by saying building the right things. And I think where DevOps comes in is that's really a way of cementing the fact that you're building the right things the right way, and doing it in such a way that you can get the feedback that Steve's been talking about. Because one of the things that's lacking, and I don't know that there has been enough cross-pollinization between the fact that, you know, we want to make sure that we're focusing on the right things, but at the same time, I also would say that a lot of organizations that have adopted Agile have completely missed those really strong engineering practices that can help ensure that, yeah, we're actually building it correctly as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about those things that extreme programming really introduced to the fore 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, something that I've seen, you know, we have to get, I'm cautiously optimistic, is there's been a lot of focus at the team level or very localized level, both, you know, we have, you know, business analysis is about somehow, or the business analyst or business analyst role is about some LK, somehow magically work shows up in the backlog and increments come out the back end of this. And we don't really go a lot talking about what happens upstream, and I think this is the wonderful conversation we're starting to have now more about the business analyst roles, is we're really addressing what does happen upstream from the product backlog. Where did that work come from? And the downstream is, okay, once that increment goes out there, where is it going? Is it, you know, the team just suddenly puts it into service? Or most organizations I've seen, there is actually a lot more wrapping and finishing that happens in the DevOps. So the beauty of this is we're getting a realistic acknowledgement of what happens upstream and downstream, and we're tying the two back together. So that's the part that's got me optimistic, that we are making progress and people are getting it. So despite my pessimism at the opening of this, that's the part that makes me hopeful.
So how do we get that feedback all the way back to the beginning?
Well, in terms of getting the feedback back, I think it's another thing the BA can do, and maybe, as you're saying, this is the future, right? We're talking about where are we heading towards, or even perhaps aspirationally in some cases. It's having the BA be the champion of the idea. How will you know? And maybe informally putting notes in the cards or keeping a separate log that just says, you know, we did these cards with the intent of moving this metric or providing this service or validating it through this thing. And if you're lucky and you can just directly go to those metrics, that's great. But it could just be, all right, we're going to have a customer satisfaction survey in 3 months. And one of the things I have to make sure on it is something that addresses this card or feature or something that's on it. Are people finding the app easier to use? You may not know that immediately from deploying the card, right? But you can at least know, okay, I have something that tells me if the work we're doing is in the right direction, the wrong direction, and be conscious of that. There's a certain, I think of it as intentionality. Are you putting the intention there and being conscious of the intention that everything you do has to tie to something to give you the learning part of the learning cycle? Otherwise, you're just going by the expert opinion of the people involved, which may be very good, but I think most businesses would like to say data would be better.
So now we've got value and intent as part of our backlog, but most organization backlogs don't contain that sort of information, do they?
Some organizations, I've seen them, they are, you know, they're able to adopt, like, why is this item here? What, you know, and I mean, there's a little bit, you could even argue that there's a little bit of that in the so-called as a blank, I want such that. I mean, there's a bit of an attempt to address that intent. But unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people follow up on that or realize that they have the flexibility that, you know, the work that they have in their backlog, if they're using user stories, is supposed to be a conversation. I think they do still, some of them take it as this is a directive and you will implement that. But as I said, I think I'm seeing some of that flexibility show up. I think this is where the BA does add their value, is being able to say, this is the intent behind this.
I guess I felt like this wasn't part of our conversation in some ways, but the so a role I see for the BA is that the dev team, and this has been my experience in many cases, says, why am I doing this thing? I mean, I get the card. I understand, do this thing because the user wants this kind of benefit and so forth. But collectively, wouldn't the user benefit more from X or Y or Z? Yeah. And then either saying, oh, well, let me show you where this fits in with the product vision. And yes, this is going to, we are addressing those points. They're, you know, they're down the product roadmap a little bit of the way. But yes, we plan to get to those. They're just not here yet because the design's tricky and it's still in research or something. But helping the dev team have that conversation and being available to have it, and if you can't have it right then, say, you know what, that's a great point. Let me grab the product owner. Maybe we have a conversation together, or, you know, he's getting back in town from doing field research on Thursday. Let's see if we can catch him right after stand-up for a few minutes. And just making sure everyone feels more connected about those subjects. And I think the dev team experiences a greater sense of satisfaction when they see how everything fits together.
I absolutely agree, because unfortunately I do see a lot of dev teams that do regard them so that feel that they operate under the mushroom shirt theory, or, you know, that they are simply, or they take the orders from the backlog, that they are requirements, not stories, and are obligated to implement those.
I think a lot of that depends on the maturity of the folks on the team. Mm-hmm. Because I've ran across, and frankly they're the folks I like to work with the most, are the ones that when I'm acting as a product owner that they question why. Mm. Because I find that really then drives me to make sure I really am bringing to the forefront the most valuable stuff. Those also tend to be the folks, if you're talking from a developer standpoint, those also tend to be the folks that probably got the best handle on the technical practices, and they also produce the most reliable and the most useful stuff. So I think a lot of it is, I mean, we've mentioned quite a few times about business analysts specifically, but I think another aspirational thing is that we aren't talking about specifically a business analyst doing things in specifically an agile fashion, that it's more along the lines of there's some generally good practices out there to make sure we're delivering value and doing the right things, and here's what they are, without having to throw an extra label onto them. That definitely is aspirational, but closer we get to that, I think the success rate of IT efforts might actually increase at that point.
Something that you touched on, that Steve had touched on earlier also, is I think worth noting for a second there, which is the most engaged developers challenge you on things, and the most, maybe it may be more senior, it may be just a perspective they have, whatever it is. I've found that those folks are also the ones saying, you know, I see how you've written this and I get the point, but then this is the dialogue they're engaging with, the conversation that the card has promised them that they'll have, not just that they're going to be a mushroom and be fed requirements, right? And they're saying, you know, if you're willing to change this a little bit, it'll take me, the 80-20 rule applies, so I can do 80% of what you want for 20% of the effort, and we can do four other cards in addition to this one if you're willing to move the size of this thing a certain amount. Understanding the value and saying, if we just do this, doesn't the customer get most of that value, and I only have to do 20% of the work? And then we're moving out of that 60% space of software that's useless. We're moving much more into the value space, and even if we miss, we've spent less to do that and find the learning. And I love it when developers push back and say, could we re-swizzle this way? And if you still need that remaining 20% of value, let's come back and do it.
Okay, so how do we encourage product owners to have the conversation, people who are doing analysis to be open to that, because isn't it, I've given you a requirement, just implement it. And also, how do we encourage the technical team members to push back, challenge, and question?
I think it's, first of all, letting them know that this is part of their job, that they have supposedly we are adopting agile methods, then they have been given permission, and not only given permission, they've been given a duty to follow through. The whole point, individuals and interactions, we're supposed to be having conversations, we're supposed to be collaborating. So I think that's a real marker that if we are taking Agile seriously within our organization, then that is what we are doing.
I think one way we can coach towards that as Agile coaches, or whatever role we have when we do these things, is to have that conversation, reserve 10, 15 minutes every sprint during whatever the right phase is, and say, look, okay, so these are the cards. What do you think? Is there a better way to provide this value to the customer? Do you see that what you're being asked for lines up with this? What's your opinion? Is this what we should be doing? and really leave them the room to answer that question. And, you know, hopefully you don't have a product owner who is, you know, being very directive, but instead being collaborative, and maybe that's a pre-conversation to have to say, look, these guys are intimate with the insides of this product that you have. Let them surface those things. You will get people who really genuinely care about the end product here and are trying to be good thought partners with you. But maybe we can put some kindling under that and try to hit a few sparks with it by asking questions about what do you think? What do you think this, put yourself in the mind of this persona. What do you think will happen if you deliver, if this car, if the product is incremented by this card and you've now experienced the difference? Are you going to like it more? Or do you not think you're going to, is it going to hit the benefit? Are you going to get the value that is implied or promised in the card?
As a product owner, I've tried to answer that question several times. And what I've learned is that I haven't got an answer yet through my experience. But I can say that there's a couple things that I'll do regardless, and then there's other things I do depending on the team I'm working with. So the things I'll do regardless is explicitly at the beginning, making sure that there is a shared understanding about what value means in the context of a particular effort. To go back to our previous conversation, it's basically saying, what are we trying to accomplish here? What are our decision filters for knowing should we do something or not? That's important in all cases. What I have found is that I can't use the same approach with one team versus another, because there are some people where the people where it does have folks on there that are going to challenge and say, just, you know, kind of give me a general idea of what we're trying to accomplish and then let us come up with a solution. Those are the folks that from a product ownership perspective are very easy to work with, as long as you figure out that you don't need to give them a lot of information, but you need to be very explicit about what you're trying to accomplish and then give them the room to operate. But you also need to be able to suss out that in case if you're working with a team that isn't quite that far along on that aspect, you have to generally be a little bit more precise and then start thinking of what are some ways I can do to get them moving along so they are start going to be thinking of those things. But you can't treat the second team as if they were more aligned to the first team, because then you end up getting a lot bigger gaps. And I can relay that from painful experience.
One other way I think the BA could benefit the team and is going to help things is being part of the one of the coordination nodes of the team. An experience I've had when people are trying to make sure that they're doing good architecture and that the software product is a quality software product, not just that the benefit is gotten, right? You're not accumulating technical debt and so on, is as part of the card shepherding process of doing whatever form you particularly do of story decomposition and writing your stories from your epics, et cetera, is to get those approved by the product owner and certainly to review them with, I typically work with a tech lead, and that part of the estimate, part of what goes into that card is that the tech lead typically has at least a candidate architecture implementation. That doesn't mean they're going to use that one, but they have one that they've said is feasible, that they could defend to the team, that they could present the team and say, for your consideration, we might do this. Now, the people who are really going to do the work are going to figure out how to do it. They're not prescribing how to do it. But it's at least something that fits within the architecture plan. And if they say, you know what, this particular thing, we don't know how we're going to do that architecturally, then you can think about, okay, that card is either going to be scored as a larger story, or we might need to play a spike first to make a decision about that. And that just contributes to the quality, because a team that's accumulating technical debt is going to have to pay that debt off at some point or you know, suffer a huge velocity hit. So I think that the BA can help with that by making sure that there's appropriate consideration of the work that's going on in the cycle. Things just don't slam into the tech team and say, whoa, what? Oh my God, that's huge. Or, yeah, we can do that, but I don't know how. It's at least a more predictable, clean flow of fuel to the dev team, and you're appropriately saying, all right, we're going to defer that car to sprint so we can do a spike this sprint to make a decision about it so we can size it next time or split it or whatever we're going to do. It's a good act. The BA becomes a really positive actor in that space to facilitate the work of the whole team.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, and, well, enjoy the conference.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.